I don't even know how to use my cell phone.
Well, today is August 9th, and we're going to do our 10th teaching in this series on learning to lambano, how to receive things from God. And what I would like to look at this morning is overcoming fear. When it comes to receiving from God and operating the manifestations of the Spirit of God, one of the things that can stop a person from even getting started or continuing is fear. And it can be, turn to 2 Timothy chapter 1 a while. But the fear could be a fear of failure. Either that, you know, God would fail or you would fail. A lot of us don't have any problem with God, but we think, well, I might not succeed in doing any of this. It could be a fear of disappointment. It could be a fear of embarrassment. It could be a fear of physical harm. It could be a fear of just the unfamiliar, being uncomfortable doing something that you've never done before, you're not used to doing. It could be a fear of people, because many times when you're operating manifestations, it's in the presence of people, and some people are intimidated by other people. What, you know, what are they going to think of me? It could be a fear of success. Meaning, what if I do receive revelation from God and I don't like what he tells me? Or if he tells me to do something I don't want to do. You know, or what if I become, you know, well known for this, and then there'll be a lot of pressure on me. So a lot of things go through people's minds, and God knows us very well. He knows us intimately from the inside out. He searches the hearts, and he's not critical of his children. He's compassionate towards his children. And he knows how to help us overcome fear. He's very good at it, too. In 2 Timothy chapter 1, and this is a letter that Paul wrote to Timothy, who was a longtime companion of his, and he was put in charge of overseeing churches, and was apparently going through a rough time at this point in his life, and God had Paul write these things to him. If you look at chapter 1, verse 7, it says, "For God hath not given us the spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind." And this is in the context of Timothy carrying out his ministry. Because it says in verse 6, it says, "Wherefore I put thee in remembrance that thou stir up the gift of God," which would be his ministry, "which is in thee by the putting on of my hands." To carry out his ministry, you would have to operate the manifestation of the Spirit. And he had plenty of experience doing it, but still had to be reminded that God has not given us the spirit of fear. And this word fear means timidity or cowardice. But he has given us the spirit of power and of love and of a sound mind. All those things help you overcome fear. Because you might be afraid because you think you lack the ability, the power. You might think, you might be afraid because you're self-centered at that moment in your life. All the focus is on yourself. When you love, the focus is on those that you're loving. It wipes out fear. And also of a sound mind, because fear can make you think in a way that's not right. When you have a sound mind, it helps you overcome. Go to the book of Psalms, smack in the middle of the Bible, Psalm 34. I believe this is a psalm of David. Sometimes you're not sure unless it's quoted in the New Testament and told that it's specifically by David. But the there's a little title under the psalm that says it's a psalm of David. Very well may be. But whether it was David or somebody else who wrote it, he had fears, and he went to God for help. The reason why I know this is it says so in verse 4. It says, I sought the Lord, and he heard me and delivered me from all my fears. God can't deliver you from fears unless, first of all, you have fears, right? So he was not afraid to admit that he had fears to start with. Most people do. There's things that just people get afraid of. That you get in a situation where you just think it's bigger than you. Too much for you to handle. But he did what was right. He sought the Lord. He went after God. He sought him. And you do that by prayer, and you do that by going to the Word of God. I sought the Lord, and he heard me. He knew that he was heard of God. And he delivered me from all my fears. And that can be a twofold thing. Delivered me from the things I was afraid of, and delivered me from being afraid of those things. Both. He was delivered from the things he was afraid of, and he was delivered from being afraid. Now, in the teachings that we've done so far, we've looked at Moses, Joshua, Jeremiah, you know, some others, and how God helped them initially to learn how to walk with him, learn how to receive revelation, learn how to do miracles. And in all these situations, God helped them overcome fears as well. Go to Exodus, first of all, chapter 3. Exodus 3 is where God called to Moses by way of an angel in a burning bush. And Moses turned aside to see this great sight, and he heard the voice, and he introduced himself as God to Moses. Verse 6 of chapter 3 says, moreover, he, and again this is the angel speaking on behalf of God, moreover, he said, I am the God of thy father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. And Moses hid his face, for he was what?
Afraid.
He was afraid to look upon God. He's dealing with God here, the Creator. He was afraid, you know. Many people are. Just the thought of God makes them afraid many times. And God worked with Moses. He gave him information. He gave him instructions. He handled all of his objections. He said, you know, who am I to go to Pharaoh and tell him to let the people go? And he said, you go, I will go with you. I will be there and I will help you on the spot. And he said, what'll I say? You know, I'm going to talk to the Hebrews. I mean, what's your name? What'll I tell them? Call them, I am what I am. I will be what I will be. And I'm the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And he said, well, they won't listen to me. They don't know me. You know, I've been away for 40 years. And so he told him to, like, throw a stick on the ground, and it became a snake, and pick it up by the tail and turn back into a stick again. And he said, put your hand in your bosom. And it came out leprosy. He said, put it back in. All healed. He said, you'll show them these signs, and they will listen to you. He said, but Pharaoh won't listen to me. Say, you will speak to Pharaoh and you'll do these signs and you'll also pour out water from the river and it'll turn into blood. And he will listen to you. Now, he's not going to let the people go. I'm going to do a lot of miracles. You know, and you're going to carry him out at my instruction. And eventually, after all my plagues that I do, he will let you go. And then he said, but, you know, I can't speak well. And he said, okay, we'll bring your brother. And what a comfort it must have been to have his own brother with him. You know, he hadn't seen his brother in at least 40 years, but it was his older brother that would be right by his side, that God would talk to Moses, Moses would speak to Aaron, and Aaron would speak to Pharaoh and to the people. And then that convinced him. That helped him overcome his fears and be willing to do the job. Look at Joshua, Exodus, Numbers, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, Joshua. Joshua was the one that had to take over in Moses' place after Moses was dead. To lead the people into the promised land and to fight the battles against the people that were already living there. To kick them out. It was a big job to do. It was a dangerous, potentially, job if you think about it. You know, here's people that, you know, they grew up as slaves in Egypt, not as warriors, but as slaves. They've been in the wilderness for 40 years. Now they had fought some battles, and Joshua was the leader of those battles at the time, and they won those battles. But Moses was always there. Now Moses is not there, and it's up to Joshua to take over. And God gave him some very encouraging words and encouraged him not to be afraid. Look at chapter 1 verse 9. He said, have not I commanded thee? Be strong and of a good courage. Be not afraid. In chapter 1 verse 9. Be not afraid, neither be thou dismayed. That means when you're ready to give up. For the Lord thy God is with thee whithersoever thou goest. That was the greatest comfort he would have to help him, is to know that God would be with him wherever he went. So if he went there, God would be with him there. If he went there, God would be with him there. And in verse 5, he had told him that there shall not any man be able to stand before thee all the days of thy life. That's a great comfort. And then he said, as I was with Moses, so I will be with thee. I will not fail thee nor forsake thee. Now Joshua knew firsthand how God was with Moses. He was Moses' personal assistant. He was there when Moses was up in the mountain getting the Ten Commandments. He was there when Moses was in the tabernacle talking with God. He was the one that, you know, Moses told him to organize the people to fight against Og of Bashan, you know. he was with Moses. He saw how God talked with him, and he said, okay, if God's going to be with Moses in that way, that was a point of reference that he had to understand how God would be with him. You know, God helped him deal with his fear. Look at Jeremiah. Isaiah, Jeremiah. Well, farther along in the Old Testament. Be about two-thirds of the way through the Bible. Jeremiah chapter 1 is another place where we looked at to see how God let a young man know that he would be a prophet.
We're looking at Jeremiah.
Jeremiah. Jeremiah is the next one after Isaiah.
Oh.
Jeremiah chapter 1. Now, usually a prophet's going to be an older man with the respect of the people that people would listen to. But God can call a person to be a prophet whether he's old or whether he's young. Moses was 80 years old when God called him to be a prophet. Samuel, on the other hand, was just a kid. The first time God talked with him and had him deliver a message to an older man who was in charge. Jeremiah was the son of one of the high priests. Father's name was Hilkiah. Hilkiah was a priest. Hilkiah would have been an older, well-respected man. But Jeremiah is the priest's kid. And now God's calling him to be a prophet and to deliver messages to the king, to all the people there, which are all family. Sometimes the most intimidating people to talk with are people in your own family, right? Because they all know you. They've watched you grow up. They might not have respected Jeremiah. He would also speak to kings of other lands, other nations. It's a big responsibility for a very young man. In his response, in, well, look at verse 5 is where God told him, before I formed thee in the belly, I knew thee. And before thou camest forth out of the womb, I sanctified thee. And I ordained thee a prophet unto the nations. Then said I, Ah, Lord God, behold, I cannot speak, for I'm a child. Who's going to listen to little Jerry? Hilkiah's kid. But the Lord said unto me, Say not I am a child. First of all, quit saying that. It's not going to help you. Sometimes when we're afraid, we repeat phrases in our minds that defeat us. You know, telling yourself that you're inadequate, you're no good, you know, you screwed it up, you're going to screw it up again. You know? I don't know about you, but I've had it.
I'm there too.
I think many of us have, we just don't tell everybody about it. So his thing was, I'm just a kid. The Lord said unto me, Say not, I am just a kid. For thou shalt go to all that I shall send thee, and whatsoever I command thee, thou shalt speak. Now, if little Jerry took it upon himself to be a prophet and took it upon himself to say, Hey, I don't think things are going right in this kingdom, nobody would listen to him, would they? But what's different about this? God says, I'm going to send you. I'm going to tell you what to say, and you're going to speak for me. Okay? You're not going to just go there speaking on your own behalf. You're going to speak for me. And I'm going to back you up. Whatsoever I command thee, thou shalt speak. You won't have to write your own speeches. Now look at verse 8. He said, Be not afraid of their faces. Because he would know those faces. those would be his uncles and grandparents and, you know, relatives, but the ones that are running the show. Be not afraid of their faces, for I am with thee to deliver thee, saith the Lord. Of course, it'd be people of other tribes too. You know, all the big honchos, the big mahouts. Don't be afraid of their faces. Don't hold back from speaking to them just because you feel intimidated by them. You speak anyway. You do what I tell you. For I am with thee to deliver thee, saith the Lord. And then he gave him some revelation and he showed him what to do. And let's skip down to verse 18. He said, for behold, I have made thee this day, when you're still a child, but I have made thee this day a defensed city and an iron pillar, brazen walls, against the whole land, against the kings of Judah, against the princes thereof, against the priests thereof, and against the people of the land, and they shall fight against thee. Why would this help him overcome the fear? It's going to prepare him. He's not going to say, if you do this right, they will like you. He's going to say, they're going to fight against you. But they shall not prevail against you. For I am with thee, saith the Lord, to deliver thee. So if they're fighting against you, they're fighting against me, God. So you just stand there and fight. It's going to be a tough job, Jeremiah. You're not going to get a favorable response. So prepare your mind for this ahead of time. You won't judge your success by the response you get from the people. Success will be doing what God says. That is success. Doing what God says. Not the response. Not the results. The faithfulness to carry it out. Now, I want to look at something that we haven't already looked at, and that's in the book of Judges, chapter 6. It's right after Joshua is Judges. And the book of Judges is about that period of time after they did enter the promised land. Between that time and the time of the first king of Israel, which would have been Saul. We read about Saul in the book of Samuel. Samuel would have been the last of the judges. So these were men that were governing the people. Many times there are men that, or women. One of the judges was a woman named Deborah, she was a prophetess.
I've never heard that expression.
That's what it says, a prophetess. You know, like a waiter, waitress, mm-hmm. steward, stewardess, prophet, prophetess. And she was the and she had a husband, but she was the one God called to be the judge in that case. Now in chapter 6, I'm going to just read, I'll give you a little summary, then we'll read some of it together. This was a number of generations after they had entered into the promised land. And it says in verse 1 that the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord. It means this whole generation, they were not obeying the word of God. They were worshiping other gods. And it could be that their parents didn't teach them, or they didn't listen to their parents, but the whole generation grew up without respect for God and the Word of God. And they got in big trouble. Because if they're praying to other gods, other than the true God can't answer those prayers. He can't help them. And they had an agreement, they had a covenant with this extended family that started in the days of Moses, but it was... would continue from generation to generation. part of the covenant was, if you worship other gods than God, bad things are going to happen. You know, disease, poverty, defeat before your enemies. At this time, they were suffering defeat before their enemies. Because it says in verse 1, the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord, and the Lord delivered them into the hand of Midian 7 years. It was part of their agreement that this would happen. They might have been, this generation might have been ignorant of that part of the agreement, but it was still in effect. And God had to back up his word. Verse 2 says, the hand of Midian prevailed against Israel, and because of the Midianites, the children of Israel made them the dens which are in the mountains and caves and strongholds. They were hiding out, not living in their houses, but living in caves and holes in the ground and stuff. And so there were lots of them. Verse 5 says that they came up with their cattle, their tents. They came as grasshoppers for multitude. Both they and their camels were without number, and they entered into the land to destroy it. Pretty bad situation. And God sent a prophet to reprove them. And then in verse 11, it says, there came an angel of the Lord, a messenger of God. And this was a spirit being that looked like a man. And this angel sat under an oak, which is in Ophrah, name of the town, that pertained to Joash of Abiezrite, and his son Gideon threshed wheat by the winepress to hide it from the Midianites. So Gideon's father's name was Joash. They had grown some crops. They would usually do the threshing at the top of a hill where there was a wind. They would beat the wheat to separate the husks from the kernels. Then they would take like a shovel that they called a fan, throw it up in the air. The wind would blow the husks away and the heavier kernels would drop down. That's threshing. Then they could grind the wheat into flour. But he was doing this in the wine press. The wine press would always be a lower area where they would press the wine, and then the wine would go into this depressed area where they could scoop the wine out after they squashed it with their feet or whatever. Like Lucy and Ethel, and, you know, I love Lucy. Okay, so he's hiding out because he's afraid, as everybody in Israel was. That's why they're in hiding. Verse 12 says, the angel of the Lord appeared unto him and said unto him, the Lord is with thee, thou mighty man of valor. Valor is bravery, courage. That was his introduction. And Gideon said unto him, O my Lord, if the Lord be with us, why then is all this befallen us? And where be all his miracles which our father told us of, saying, did not the Lord bring us up from Egypt? But now the Lord hath forsaken us. He's abandoned us. And he's delivered us into the hands of the Midianites. So what do you call me a mighty man of valor for, and saying the Lord's with us? Doesn't look like it to me. And the Lord looked upon him and said, go in this thy might, and thou, Gideon, you shall save Israel from the hand of the Midianites. Have not I sent thee? You, one man, you're going to save your nation from all these people that are like so many you can't even count. And he said unto him, O my Lord, wherewith shall I save Israel? How am I going to do that? Behold, my family is poor in Manasseh, and I'm the least in my father's house. We're a poor family, and I'm the youngest kid. What am I going to do? The Lord said unto him, surely I will be with thee. Every time God encouraged someone who was afraid, he told him, I will be with you. Interesting. Yeah. When God's with you, that gives you courage to face anything. Surely I will be with thee, and thou shalt smite the Midianites as one man. It's not not going to have to go after the whole 120,000 of them, one at a time. You're going to smite them as all in one shot. as if you only had to kill one guy. And he said unto him, if now I have found grace in thy sight, then show me a sign that thou talkest with me. Give me, you know, I've heard your words. I could be dreaming this. I could just be crazy with the heat. I don't know. Show me something tangible that I know that this is from God. He needed some assurance. Verse 18 says, depart not hence, I pray thee, until I come unto thee and bring forth my present and set it before thee. And he said, I will tarry until thou come again. So the angel said, I'll wait here under the tree. So Gideon went in, and he made ready a kid, means a young goat, unleavened cakes, an ephah of flour. The flesh he put in a basket, and he put the broth in a pot, and he brought it unto him under the oak and presented it. It probably took a little bit of time, but he got right to work. And the angel of God said unto him, take the flesh and the unleavened cakes and lay them upon this rock and pour out the broth. And he did so. Then the angel of the Lord put forth the end of the staff that was in his hand and touched the flesh and the unleavened cakes, and there rose up fire out of the rock and consumed the flesh and the unleavened cakes. Then the angel of the Lord departed out of his sight. That would be something to say, yeah, this is not just some guy telling me something, or not just me imagining it, but this is real, and this is God. Verse 22, and when Gideon perceived that he was an angel of the Lord, apparently he didn't recognize that until now, because he looked like a man, Gideon said, alas, O Lord God, because I have seen an angel of the Lord face to face. People had this idea that if they would see an actual angel, that they would die. And the Lord said unto him, peace be unto thee, fear not, thou shalt not die. Now the angel's gone, but God at this point is talking with him directly. So he has to have spirit upon him at this point. You're not going to die. Don't be afraid. Peace be unto thee. Then the angel built an altar there unto the Lord and called it Jehovah Shalom, which means the Lord our peace. Unto this day it is an Ophrah of the Ebezrites. I guess at the time this was written anyway. And it came to pass the same night that the Lord said unto him, so God's still able to talk to him now by way of the Spirit upon him. He said, take thy father's young bullock, even the second bullock of 7 years old, and throw down the altar of Baal that thy father hath, and cut down the grove that is by it. So his own father had a statue of Baal, or Baal, however you pronounce it, but it was a false god. His own father had this in his backyard. So God said, cut it down, and build an altar unto the Lord thy God upon the top of this rock in the ordered place. Take the second bullock, offer a burnt sacrifice with the wood of the grove which thou hast cut down. So he had a statue and a grove, the planting of trees, I believe, unless grove means something else. But it had to do with trees anyway, made out of wood. Then Gideon took 10 men of his servants and did as the Lord had said unto him. And so it was, because he feared his father's household and the men of the city, that he could not do it by day, that he did it by night. So God didn't tell him what time of the day to do it, so he said, let's do it at nighttime. Because Gideon still had fears to overcome. When the men of the city arose early in the morning, verse 26, behold, the altar of Baal was cast down, the grove was cut down that was by it, and the second bullock was offered upon the altar that was built. And they said to one another, who hath done this thing? And when they inquired and asked, they said, Gideon, the son of Joash, hath done this thing. Then the men of the city said unto Joash, bring out thy son, that he may die, because he hath cut down the altar of Baal, because he hath cut down the grove that was by it. So apparently all the people of that town were Baal worshippers at this point, and they considered that an illegal act. Joash said unto all that stood against him, why plead ye for Baal? Will ye save him? He that will plead for him, let him be put to death while it is yet morning. If he be a god, let him plead for himself, because one hath cut down his altar. So his dad said, you know, I don't really buy into this Baal business anyway. If Baal's really a god, well, let Baal stick up for himself. What do you have to stick up for? So anyway, that's what happened. Now, God had more dealings with Gideon, and he gave him some instructions on how to attack the Midianites. But Gideon still needed some assurance. In verse 36, Gideon said unto God, if thou wilt save Israel by my hand, as thou hast said, that I understand that. And if you're really going to do this, it says, behold, I will put a fleece of wool on the floor, or on the, you know, on the ground. If the dew be on the fleece only, and it be dry upon all the earth beside, then shall I know that thou wilt save Israel by mine hand, as thou hast said. So, this is where you get the expression, putting your fleece before God.
Is any kind of testing God?
He was looking for something, some assurance that was tangible, because he was very concerned, because it wasn't only his own life that was at stake, but everybody else's. He just wanted to be very sure that this was all for real and that God was still backing him up here. Mm-hmm. Verse 38 says, and it was so, for he rose up early in the morrow and thrust the fleece together and wringed the dew out of the fleece a bowl full of water. And Gideon said unto God, let not thine anger be hot against me, and I will speak but this once. Let me prove, I pray thee, but this once with the fleece. Let it now be dry only upon the fleece, and upon all the ground let there be dew. You know, reverse it. Just so I know it wasn't some coincidence. And God did so that night, for it was dry upon the fleece only, and there was dew on all the ground. And it didn't say that God got angry about this. This was his man that he needed to do a big job, something he had never done before, and he just needed some assurance. Chapter 7, then Jerubbaal, who is Gideon, that's how he got the nickname Jerubbaal by his father, means let Baal plead for himself. So Jerubbaal, who's Gideon, and all the people that were with him rose up early, and they pitched beside the well of Harod, so that the host of the Midianites were on the north side of them by the hill of Moreh in the valley. And the Lord said unto Gideon, the people that are with thee are too many for me to give the Midianites into their hands, lest Israel vaunt themselves against me, saying, mine own hand hath saved me. Now therefore go to, proclaim in the ears of the people, saying, whosoever is fearful and afraid, let him return and depart early from Mount Gilead. And there returned of the people 22,000, and there remained 10,000. So they start out with an army of 32,000. Gideon's leading the army, and God said, tell the people, if anyone's afraid, and this was part of the law too, it said before any battle, the high priest was supposed to address all the troops and say, if anyone's afraid, go home. If anyone's recently married, go home. If anyone just bought a house, go home. And they would let people go. Now, if you admitted you were afraid and went home, that was kind of a shameful thing. But in this case, was it 22,000? Out of 32,000,
said, make up some kind of excuse and display it.
Yeah, said, all you have to do is be afraid and I don't have to fight the Midianites? I'm going home. So the majority said, hey, I'm out of here. There are 10,000 left. Verse 4, the Lord said unto Gideon, the people are yet too many. Bring them down unto the water, and I will try them for thee there. And it shall be that of whom I say unto thee, this shall go with thee, the same shall go with thee. And of whomsoever I say unto thee, this shall not go with thee, the same shall not go. So you don't have to decide, Gideon. I'll decide and I'll tell you. So he brought down the people unto the water, and the Lord said unto Gideon, everyone that lappeth of the water with his tongue as a dog lappeth, him shalt thou set by himself. Likewise, everyone that boweth down upon his knees to drink. And the number of them that lapped, putting their hand to their mouth, so that if they scooped up the water and drank it that way, there were only 300 out of 10,000 that drank the water that way. So all the rest of the people bowed down upon their knees to drink the water. And the Lord said unto Gideon, by the 300 men that lapped will I save you, and deliver the Midianites into thine hand. Let all the other people go, every man unto his own place. So these were the people that, you know, all the 10,000 minus that 300, they were willing to fight. They were the brave ones. And God said, send them home. These 300 guys, that's all we're going to need. So that's what they did. Verse 8, so the people took victuals in their hand and their trumpets, and he sent all the rest of Israel, every man unto his tent, entertained those 300 men, and the host of Midian, the whole army of Midian, was beneath him in the valley. And it came to pass the same night that the Lord said unto him, arise, get thee down unto the host, for I have delivered it into thine hand. But if thou fear to go down, because again, he knew Gideon. He knew he was still a little afraid. If thou fear to go down, go thou with Phurah thy servant down to the host. So he had a servant named Phurah. He said, just the two of you, you sneak down there to the edge of the Midianite army at night. Verse 11, and thou shalt hear what they say, and afterward shall thine hands be strengthened to go down unto the host. Then went he down with Phurah his servant unto the outside of the armed men that were in the host. And the Midianites and the Amalekites and all the children of the east lay along in the valley like grasshoppers for multitude, and their camels were without number as the sand by the seaside for multitude. And when Gideon was come, behold, there was a man that told a dream unto his fellow, and said, behold, I dreamed a dream, and lo, a cake of barley bread tumbled into the host of Midian, and came unto a tent, and smote it, that it fell, and overturned it, that the tent lay along. So he said, I just had the weirdest dream. And Gideon's listening in just at the time this guy is telling his buddy this dream. He said, I had this dream that a little round barley loaf rolled down the hill and knocked down the whole tent. And his fellow, verse 14, his fellow answered and said, this is nothing else save the sword of Gideon, the son of Joash, a man of Israel, for into his hand hath God delivered Midian and all the host. Isn't that something? That just at that moment, that Gideon and his servant, who was also a witness to this, came down there, that one man told the guy his dream, the other man gave him the interpretation of that dream, and the interpretation was that Gideon is going to beat us all. These are the enemy. These are the unbelievers. But God had given a dream to one guy and had given the interpretation to another guy. So they must have had spirit upon him, even just for that brief period of time. And Gideon heard it. What would that do to your heart if you heard your enemy saying that in confidence? They don't know you're listening. You know, well, okay, this is not God just trying to encourage me with words. This is somebody else saying so. You know, it was just, must have been just amazing to him to hear that. Verse 15 says, and it was so, when Gideon heard the telling of the dream and the interpretation thereof, that he worshipped, and returned unto the host of Israel, and said, Arise, for the Lord hath delivered into your hand the host of Midian. Everything up to that point, he was still afraid, but now the fear's gone.
Right.
He knew it, you know, absolutely knew it. And he divided the 300 men into three companies, put a trumpet in every man's hand with empty pitchers, lamps or torches within the pitchers. Then he said unto them, Look on me and do likewise. Behold, when I come to the outside of the camp, it shall be that as I do, so shall ye do. When I blow with the trumpet, I and all that are with me, then blow ye the trumpets also on every side of all the camp, and say, The sword of the Lord and of Gideon. So Gideon and the 100 men that were with him came into the outside of the camp at the beginning of the middle watch, when they had but newly set the watch, means they just changed the guards. Okay? So the new guards, they'd been sleeping. They got up, they're a little drowsy yet. The other guards, they went back to bed. So they newly set the watch, and they blew the trumpets, the 300 trumpets blowing, which can make a pretty loud noise. I mean, 76 trombones is a lot, but 300 trumpets, that can make a big noise. And they break the pitchers that were in their hands so that the torches were visible. And the three companies blew the trumpets, break the pitchers, held the lamps in the left hand and the trumpets in their right hands to blow withal. And they cried, The sword of the Lord and of Gideon. So 300 guys speaking in unison, surrounding the whole army. The sword of the Lord and of Gideon. And they stood every man in his place round about the camp, and all the host ran. The whole army panicked.
They knew.
And they cried and fled. They didn't know there's only 300 guys. The host ran and fled, and the 300 blew the trumpets, and the Lord set every man's sword against his fellow, even throughout all the host. And the host fled to Bethshitta and Zererath unto the border of whatever that is, unto Tabith. And the men of Israel gathered themselves together out of Naphtali and out of Asher and out of all Manasseh and pursued after the Midianites. And Gideon sent messengers throughout all Mount Ephraim, saying, Come down against the Midianites and take before them the waters unto Ben-Berah and Jordan. Then all the men of Ephraim gathered themselves together and took the waters of Beth-Berah and Jordan. And he took two princes of the Midianites, Oreb and Zeeb, and slew Oreb upon the rock. Oreb and Zeeb, they slew at the winepress of Zeeb. Probably named those things after they killed them there. And they pursued Midian and brought the heads of Oreb and Zeeb to Gideon on the other side, Jordan. So, one man listening to God, following instructions, and overcoming fear with God's help. You know, he didn't have to figure out how to overcome his own fear. You know, he asked God to do the fleece thing, which God did. But when it was God's idea, you know, with the dream and the interpretation, who would have thought of that? Only God. You know, and God knows exactly what it's going to take to help you not to be afraid. And if he's got something for you to do and you're afraid to do it, but, you know, still willing to do it, he will help you. He knows how to help you overcome fear. So I had some other things to share, but we'll do that next time around. But that's how God helped those Old Testament prophets, and that's how he helped that one guy named Gideon, and he saved Israel out of all those Midianites.
What was his name now? What was his surname or nickname?
Jerubbabel.
Jerubbabel,
yeah.
Guess he didn't go for that.
Yeah.
Wasn't there a battle where God told them just to shine up their those round things that their shields, and he told them to make them shine real good like glass, and then they went to fight this other company, and the sun was shining on their shields, and they blinded the other. The bad guys.
Don't recall that one.
I remember silly things.
I don't recall that from the Bible. There were other times where God had people just go stand and not even have to fight.
That was one of them, where they just
where God would
shields.
Or where God would turn one armory against another and they'd all get confused and panic. And this happened here with the Midianites. They fought against, like, there were Amalekites and Midianites, and they fought against each other. You know, and they were defeated.
Did it say in here that Gideon, did they have to cross the Jordan River?
Now, that was with Joshua.
Oh, okay.
Joshua and all the Israelites who crossed the Jordan River. But here they took the Jordan, you know, from the Midianites, because the Midianites had captured the whole land.
Well, was the Jordan the one that Moses parted?
Joshua.
That was the Red Sea.
Yeah, Moses parted the Red Sea. Joshua had the people walk through the Jordan River, and that parted for him.
Oh, it did?
Yeah.
Was that when he was going to battle, or?
After Moses was dead, God told Joshua to go cross the Jordan River, which was at flood stage, so it was deeper than it normally was at the time. And he told him, have the priests carry the Ark of the Covenant into the Jordan River, and as soon as the priest's feet hit the waters were cut off from upstream, and they walked over on dry ground.
Oh.
So that happened twice.
Yeah.
Are you going to try to kill him?
Yeah.
And not only that, but there was a prophet named Elijah.
I can kill spiders.
And he had Elisha was Elijah's servant that took over from. There was a time where Elijah and Elisha crossed over the Jordan River, and it parted just for those two. And then Elisha crossed back again, and it parted just for him. So
isn't Elijah? Wasn't he supposed to come either before or after John the Baptist, or is he saying?
Yeah, Elijah was supposed to come before the Messiah would come, and Jesus Christ said that that referred to John the Baptist.
But what is that, Elijah's second coming? He turned into
it wasn't John really Elijah. It says John the Baptist came in the spirit and power of Elijah.
Oh.
That was part of the prophecy of Zechariah, which was John the Baptist's father, or the angel telling him. Yeah, it was the angel Gabriel telling Zechariah that your son that will be born will come in the spirit and power of Elijah to turn the hearts of the fathers to the children, you know, to really get them to turn their hearts back to God, really. Which Elijah was able to do when all the people were worshiping Baal. He got the whole kingdom of Israel worshiping God in a day. You know, had a big showdown.
About Baal. Yeah, the showdown.
The fire coming down from heaven.
Love that one.
Yeah, it's another great one to look at. All right.
Isn't God wonderful?
He sure is.